And there's this notion of positional power. Like if I take away your title on LinkedIn and I meet you at like a, you know, some cocktail party or something like that, or at a conference, and you can't tell me your SVP, whatever it is you are, you have to communicate the value that you provide.
You're listening to Writer on Block, the podcast for serious authors who are ready to scale their careers with smart strategy. I'm Nicole, your host, and I help authors navigate publishing, marketing, and multi-format expansion, all while keeping the vibe high. Today, I'm sitting down with Dr. Rod Berger to explore how storytelling shapes not just our books, but our identity as authors. He has interviewed over 4,000 people worldwide, from Pope Francis to NBA legend Magic Johnson. With his debut book releasing November 12th, he shares why storytelling isn't just a skill, it's a tool for self-worth, connection, and building an authentic author brand. Additional information is available in the show notes. Okay, let's dive in. Thank you so much, Dr. Rod Berger, for joining us on Writer on Block.
Thank you, Nicole.
I don't know where I'm so overwhelmed about where to start because your background is so impressive. Your website is beautiful, and I'm going to link everything in the show notes. People should take notes. People should go
to
your website.
It's a good start to an interview, Nicole. I like this. What are we doing tomorrow and the next day?
People should take notes. I love a good presentation. And it's very visual. I love, you know, all the people you've interviewed, the places you've traveled. And is The Narrative Edge, is this your first book?
It is. Yeah, this is my first. Now, I've contributed chapters and I've done people's forewords. So I've been sort of all around. But this was finally the time where I took the leap.
This is great. Okay. So why don't you give us just the elevator pitch, the quick intro and elevator pitch about the book, and then we can hop
sure.
right into The Narrative Edge.
I mean, the elevator pitch on the book is, this is the best way to say it. So I am very lucky and humbled that I'm one of the few, I've interviewed so many authors myself, so I understand the struggle going from, I have an idea, I want to contribute something to society or a certain community, but I don't know the process, or people think of writing a book like public speaking or running a marathon. It's just, it feels this ambiguous and hard. I was very, very lucky and blessed that Wiley reached out to me.
Oh, they reached out to you.
I know. And I'm happy to share that story if you want. But I will say, as part of that story, I said to them right away, I said, if you're looking for a book that is like, you know, the five steps to writing a better story, something formulaic, I said, I'm not your guy. While I'm, you know, humbled that you're reaching out to me, like, that's not the book you're going to get from me. Thankfully, they said, no, we don't want that. We've been following you and we just want your take. Like, you do you, which to me is an incredible thing for someone to tell somebody in a creative endeavor, I think. Like, Nicole, you just do you. Meaning,
liberating.
That's a great word. Yeah, it's liberating. It gives you the paintbrush and the paints and the canvas and the timeline. You know what I mean? So you're in control of that. And in my writing experience in the past, you're not always in control. So that was really great. So really, it's a collection of stories. I don't even know what the percentage is. You learn a lot about me. I didn't know if I would do that in the beginning, but in essence, it was like, sometimes you're writing a story or even it's an interview or a piece you're doing. Like when I used to write with Forbes, you are a part of the story. It's really hard to ignore that you're a part of what's going on in the way in which you're telling that story. So, you know, you could argue that this book is 30% memoir. You're right. It's not that I'm sharing my story chronologically at all. It's just that I am sharing my experiences relative to the stories that I've captured and been very lucky to capture around the world. And in that, I wrote it as more of an album, like old school, like, you know, side A, side B, meaning, you know, if Nicole, you're an artist, right? And you're a singer and I follow you and it's like, someone says, hey, what's Nicole's latest album like? And you're like, you know what? I really like it because there's a certain period of time it seems like she's focusing on. I don't have to listen to the first song or I can go to side B, whatever it is. But I know that that's sort of the flavor of that album for you.
Right.
And the same thing with this book. The Narrative Edge is, I wanted to push the bounds of where story lives in our lives. And so if you read chapter one, great, and continue chronologically. If you don't, I think you're going to get, you might miss a couple of things and say, I need to go back to chapter three or whatever he's referencing. But I intentionally did it so that it didn't feel like that. I want this to be the kind of book that you say, I want to read it again.
Right. And you can pick up like, whatever chapter you want.
Yeah. Whatever chapter, a year from now, 2 years, like, oh, you know, because I know so many people that do that. They'll say, you know, it's funny. I read the same book once a year. This one book I read, you know, on an ongoing basis. So
comforting.
It's comforting. And really, it's, you know, the feedback has been wonderful, but that's really the you know, so I take you all across the U.S. I take you into a refugee camp in Eastern Africa. I take you to Western Africa. I take you to my experience with the Pope, you know, Formula One. So if anything, it's a, I hope people go on a bit of a trip. And that I will say this, and then I'll defer to you. One of the best compliments that I've gotten from reviewers, I got a note that just said, I feel myself within the stories that you're writing. And that to me was, you know, someone says like, what's the greatest compliment? Well, I have mine being an interviewer, and there are certain things that if I hear it, I'm like, wow, okay, that's really great to hear. And it means I was sort of on my game. But I think if somebody reads this book and says, I could see myself, like I maybe have never been there, but I felt like I was like next to you as you were going through that experience, or that person was sharing that story or that vulnerability. That to me is, you know, that's the kind of thing where you say, I don't know what I did, but I know I did that.
I think that is a really good point, because a lot of people are hesitant to share their story or weave their personal story into their branding or into the narrative. But curiously enough, that's what connects you to other people, because if someone can connect to, oh, even if I wasn't there, someone can connect to an aspect of your story. That's how you start building a brand and likability and connection and a following. And I'm interested in talking to you about this topic because obviously the audience for this podcast and the people that I talk to are authors, and the vast majority are introverted. They will post or talk about their book, but I never really get like, who is this author on social? Like when I look at the social media posts or the TikToks or what have you, yeah. You're telling me about the story. You're telling me about your characters, but it's so hard to get to know the author. So I'm having a blast with this podcast because I'm like forcing people to have a conversation with me about who they are and why they thought of this book and what were the trials and tribulations of writing it and promoting it and getting a publisher or self-publishing, you know, what have you. So I guess what's the magic bullet point? how can we get people to leverage their personal story? And this is for me too to learn, because I often think like, oh, I have an interesting background, I have an interesting story, but I don't find myself often talking about it.
I think it's a great question. I think it's obviously a broad question in the way in which we apply that, I think, through life. So for me, I had a watershed moment. So I'm someone who says yes. Sometimes I say yes too much. I said yes to a random email that I got on a Sunday afternoon from a name. I thought, I think I know that name. It's a famous publicist out of New York, but I've never been connected with her. And I randomly said, I took a flyer on the email, opened it up, and it was a real email. And it was a couple of weeks later, I was on my way to Senegal to go document stories about, you know, girl marriage and these different things, child marriage and issues of that. And as I'm on that flight and I'm starting, we're descending and we're going to land in Dakar in Senegal. I will tell you, Nicole, I just, for whatever reason, I don't know if it was jet lag. I don't know if it was the nerves of being on the continent, you know, like within moments. And I just said, I'm tired of writing what I think other people want to hear. In essence, I am not your scribe, right? I am not, just because I've interviewed a CEO of note or something like that as an example, I am not, there's nothing saying that I have to tell the story that you want me to tell. I am not just another version of a press release. And so as we're landing and I'm looking down at this landscape that I've never just visually seen myself, I just said, I'm going to write me. And so I said, all right, I'm going to write daily, basically sort of journals and publish them on Facebook. I'm just going to, within my own sort of friends and family and extended network of my experience in Africa. And I started getting responses because my profile is public, from people in different parts of the world that I've never met before. that because I was so expressive, and people will talk about my writing. This is other people saying it. There's a poetic sort of rhythm to it. And I had these folks saying, you know, I remember one, it was a CEO, and he just said, I believe it's whatever time in Africa right now. I'm just curious when you're going to post your next update.
And they were eager for the rest.
Yeah. And I just thought, I'm touching on something, because those journal entries were my experience as a middle-aged male, a white male, someone who has a doctorate, who would be categorized as highly educated just from a, you know, demographic, like all these sorts of things that I represent visually to people or on paper. And I shared that. I shared the vulnerabilities. I talked about what it was like when I met young African children who had never seen a white face.
Right.
I wouldn't trade that experience for anything in the world. That's like a bucket list doesn't go in a bucket. That's a human experience that I think gets depicted in movies and fantasy. And you just think, where would you get that? It's like an explorer that finds a new land, you know?
Right.
They put their eyes on something that no other human has seen. And when you've had that and you say, okay, sharing that experience is connecting with people. I think it's important. I mean, I talk a lot in the book around sort of this notion of, you know, it's the characters that we play in the stories that we live. And in essence, if I'm not in charge of narrating and authoring my own story, I do run the risk of somebody else or something else writing my story. And it's because, to me, it goes really deep into the self-worth component, which is, I don't know if I have something to share that is perceived to have value, right? And ultimately, what does that lead to? It means, do I matter? It's a really simple question. Do I matter? Because if I feel that I do matter, then I would think from a perspective of maybe there's something I can share. Doesn't mean that I have to be on a stage in front of school children or in front of corporate. It doesn't, but I have something that I can share that is of substance and that will be of value to other people.
I didn't think this was going to turn into a therapy session, but what you just shared I have myself struggled with this concept of like, does my opinion matter? Does it have value? Does what I have to say authentically expressing myself is a bad thing, right? Everything has to be tailored and the language has to be businesslike. And can I post that on LinkedIn? Like, that's not for the LinkedIn audience. And so recently I started a Substack for pleasure, and I said, I don't have a schedule. I will write about whatever I want. I don't need to connect it to how it relates to my work. I just want to write. Right. But I want to post it on LinkedIn because this is who I am. And I started really seeing myself through this lens of like, oh, this is my title. And this is the work that I do. And this is like not something an SVP and publisher would post or talk about. And I started feeling the constraint of that very deeply. I turned 41 in June, and I don't know if that had something to do with it, but I just suddenly started feeling this almost like a sensation like in my throat of like, I can't, there's something I want to say and I can't.
Almost like
say.
You're not being honest to yourself.
Yes.
And you know, it's a dangerous place to be, because I equate it to this, and I do believe I talk about this in the book, but that it's a little bit like returning a rental car where you cross over the spikes, you can't go back. Because once you've allowed your voice to express, right, I don't think you can go back. If anything, you want more instances and opportunities to be able to feel that sort of that creative power is the word that came to mind. This is really, it's not about power. I don't mean it like that, but it's that you just can't go back, because now you can spot it. You can spot something that's not authentic. You can say, it's synthetic, right? It's made to look as if it's real and it's not. And that's part of the writing process. It's almost like I'd say to you, you know, what if you were as an activity, not forced, but it was recommended that you took the frame of like an actor, like what's your frame? You are a writer who writes what she wants. Now play that out. What is it that you would write if you didn't have to submit it to an editor? You didn't even care if an editor got it. And you pushed yourself to say, I know I've been doing an essay here and an essay and a Substack. What if I strung them together? Like, what if I sort of linked them all together? Like, what do I have? Because you're right, the writing process in general is incredibly vulnerable. And for those authors that are listening, I mean, I'm happy to go into that process, but it's, I don't care how many things you've written over time and how many people have read you publicly, it is, it's really stressful. But you did point, you touched on something that I think is really valuable, this notion of like, where my value comes from. So I guest lectured at Vanderbilt's business school for almost 2 decades. And really what it was when I was working with these students was around basically applying story to business. Like, what's my story within business? And there's this notion of positional power. Like, if I take away your title on LinkedIn and I meet you at like a, you know, some cocktail party or something like that, or at a conference, and you can't tell me your SVP, whatever it is you are, you have to communicate the value that you provide through narrative. Like, where most people say, oh, you know, what do you do? And it's, well,
And you respond with a title.
Yeah. You respond with a title because it's a way to create some level of distance. And you're kind of testing, you're teasing to see, they think that that's impressive enough. And you sort of, then you go from there. But you've started off in a position where you're not being authentic. Yet, if you go on, when someone goes on, let's say a blind date or a first date, as they're walking into the wine bar, the coffee shop, whatever it is, up to the door to, you know, I pick somebody up, you're thinking about the story that you're going to share because you want to convey the best part of you. If you get pulled over by a cop tomorrow for speeding, as they're walking to your window, you are saying, what is my story? If you're a child who's not intending to do anything wrong, but you wanted to get a cookie out of the proverbial cookie jar, right? Uh-oh, dad saw me. What is my story? You know, like, why did I do that? If I'm going to be late for a soccer practice as a kid, what do I tell the coach? What is my story? You can't avoid story. So it's one of those things when you give over to it and you say, I'm a part of this narrative. Then I start to understand, wow, I do have some impact.
It's empowering. I'm feeling empowered as I'm listening to you say that, right? Like, I'm feeling like, oh, this is very empowering. right? Because I want to challenge myself after we're done here. Like, what is my answer at that cocktail party? What should my answer be? And what does that say about me?
Yeah. And then it's okay that you don't have, that's the other part too, I think, the inverse of that. It's like, it's okay. Like, story is messy, right? There are stories. Let me give you an example, if you don't mind. It does come from the book, but it's something that it's an experience that I had just recently. I was at the American Camp Association's National Conference, and sadly, obviously what had happened in Texas is just so unbelievable, indescribable. And I can't believe that so many of those people were most likely in the audience when I shared a keynote with Opal Lee, their closing keynote. And Opal Lee is the grandmother of Juneteenth. She'll be 99 in October. And it's so interesting about story because, again, this is where you challenge sort of these paradigms that you have, these sort of like, well, this is how it works. We have this notion of how story works or are the role we play. Sometimes it's actually you want to stop the elevator between two floors because it changes your vantage point. You want to watch Dead Poets Society and see Robin Williams tell Ethan Hawke, like, stand up on the desk and what do you see? My captain, right, when he goes through this whole scene. But I was sitting with Opal Lee, who, if you don't know who she is, look her up. Opal Lee, O-P-A-L Lee. She is just, the energy she has at her age and what she does is incredible. She's just an outstanding exemplar of a human being. I'm sitting with her. There was a lunch. It was 1,500 people in the audience. And before we went up, everyone was having this lunch, right, for these 1,500 people. And she and I are at the front. We're just sitting, getting to know each other before we go on stage. And I basically help sort of basically get her story out and help facilitate that conversation. And it struck me in that moment. And I said, I should ask her about Martin Luther King, just given her age and what role she's played as a civil rights activist. And so I asked her, and I found out that the day that he came to Fort Worth, Texas, it was the only time he had come. It just happened. She was going to meet him. But one of her dear friends was giving birth to like her first child. And basically, it was one of those things. Well, I have plenty of time to meet Martin, right? On first name basis, right? And so she went with her friend, did not meet him. And we know how that story ends. In the moment, Nicole, I thought, oh, that's not a story. Like, I won't share that story to the audience. because it didn't have the ending that I think we would think that it should have. So again, this just shows that I know you're not saying that, like, there's no perfection on my side at all. I stumble to these sort of narrative elements all the time. And some of it is dumb luck, and some of it's just all the work that I've done where hopefully it steers me in the right way. But when we were on stage, there was just something about the command that she had, even with her subtlety in her voice and the sort of the lack of volume in some levels, just because of her age and the way everyone was sort of holding on to every word. And so I just decided in that moment, no, that is the story to tell. So I'm actually going to close with that. And you could hear a pin drop, because it wasn't that we didn't get to hear about whatever this meeting would have been with this just absolutely iconic figure of our species, right? It's that she didn't, because she made a human choice, right, to be there for a friend, to welcome life into this world. And the power of that, that was one of those moments where sometimes what we think is not a story is a story. And there's great value that people can take from that.
Absolutely. You know who's taught me a lot about that whole concept is I work for Malcolm Gladwell, and he will surprise and delight me because he's telling me something and I think he's going to go a certain way. And then the story he is pulling out is so completely, I did not see it coming. And it's so much more interesting. And it's usually things that people wouldn't pick up, right? Yeah. They wouldn't think there's a story there to be told. So I agree with you. And I almost wish I would have been there with the audience when you said that, because there is no clean resolution to that story.
I love the way you put that. There's no clean resolution at all.
But there is, in the sense that it's like, I made that human choice, right? She made that.
Yeah, and it said something about her character, right? Like, if you get cast in a movie right now, you're going to want to know it's a biopic or something. You know, you're going to learn about whoever it is you're playing. You want those kind of layers. Like, that's gold, because it tells you so much more than just an accomplishment or an award.
Right.
And that might inform the way in which you, just the way the gate with which you enter a scene, because you're that individual that would skip something that others would be going to because, you know, fear of missing out, right? The FOMO of everything.
So how does an author leverage their personal narrative?
So I appreciate that question. I think in the moment, how I think about this would be, if I had to teach a class, like right now I'm leaving our interview and I'm going to teach a class, I think it would be it would be like sort of looking at negative space in art, right? So don't look at what you see, but let's look at the negative space and what does that reveal? So in essence, if I'm talking to a first-time author, as an exercise, don't give me sort of the top tips that you have from whatever level of experience and based on the sector that you work in or whatever, right? Give me the narrative of that, like the experience of that. Like, help me understand that. It's almost like writing a script. So in a script, the dialogue between you and I obviously has to be powerful, and it's got to show sort of the conflict and drama, right? Sort of the rub between, like, why is it that we're having some level of conflict or impending conflict? But it's also in the description of sort of setting the stage, the environment, the landscape with where we're having our conversation or wherever that interaction is happening is as powerful, if not more powerful, because that allows a cinematographer to basically say, this is the look and feel of this film. Like, this is what I want. I want there to be this hint of, like, there's a brooding, there's a heaviness to these characters or whatever it is. And so I think when you're a first-time author, I think it's easy to fall into, I'm providing an answer. My book is going to answer this question. And you talk to literary agents and you talk to people in the literary world, and it's always, you know, a good author if they found their voice. What are they talking about? The voice it's the rhythm, right? Like, I think, I'm not a musician. I write listening to classical music or to movie scores. That's my favorite. And I do it on repeat. So if I'm on one, like for this book, one of the main ones was like the Cornfield Chase from Interstellar with Matthew McConaughey. Oh. Listen to that song. And if you write to that, Nicole. But Shawshank, American Beauty, all these, you know, that's for me. But you should be able to, if you can take away that I'm not providing an answer, right? Like in my experience, what I went through, it was like, I'm not giving you an answer to how to do something. I am either, in a nonfiction way, I am talking about these concepts, but these concepts, but I'm humanizing them. This is not a talking to. This is not me standing up at a lectern. And I think a lot of people approach it that way. And I'll get people that I know tangentially that will say, hey, will you read this book proposal? And they'll send me over their stuff. And they're incredibly bright, but they're teaching. They're telling me. And I think readers pick up on that.
Oh, absolutely. It's right? like being in school.
Yeah. And why is it that people will gravitate toward, like, why does a Brené Brown all of a sudden explode? It's because you feel a sense of vulnerability in the way in which she talks at a TED Talk or when you read her book that she talks about, like, experiences with her husband and these sorts of things. It humanizes. Right. So to me, that should be the pressure test of an author of their own writing. Because if you don't feel connected to it and you don't feel like you got into a zone when you were writing that, the people reading it probably won't either. They just won't. You want them to say, oh my gosh, what time is it? I can't believe I ended up reading. I just couldn't, or I had to get to the end of this and put a kind of, bookend it. But I just find a lot of people that send me stuff, it's very packaged because we live in a world where, well, you can just, everybody can publish. Well, sure, technically you can, but does that, like, where are you publishing? Into the ether?
Right.
I don't know, right? There are plenty of books that are self-published that are highly successful. I'm talking about just the quality of the writing. So I think leveraging your story is about, is my voice coming through? In essence, really the simplest way to do that, people who've known me my whole life, if they read this book, will they know that it's me?
Oh, and that's an interesting, right?
Take your name off of the front cover. How would they know it's you? Can you answer that question? And if you can't, then I would say you're leaving opportunity on the table. Like, you're leaving letters, words, and prose, P-R-O-S-E, on the table that could help connect you with a reader. That, like, for me, it felt really great when I went, it's like, no, that's you. Like, I can hear, it's like I hear you talking and reading it to me.
Right.
So I don't know if that answered your question,
no,
but I just think that...
It does. It does because, I mean, obviously this is very applicable to nonfiction. And one day I say when I have time, I would love to write a nonfiction book. I have had an amazing experience in my career and how I landed this career and how I ended up in publishing and then audiobooks specifically. And there's so much I've learned. I'm a very operational minded person. So there's so much I want to say about my experience. And you're right. I sort of tend to gravitate to, like, what am I going to teach? Like, what's the takeaway? What's the package?
Yeah.
But there's this whole way more interesting, exciting side if I start writing from a place of what has been my experience and my story in this corporate publishing world.
And there's an extension to this, Nicole, because I did not anticipate this. So when I started sending out my manuscript to get initial reviews and blurbs or whatever, because I've been lucky enough to travel around the world and do stuff just not here in the US, it's interesting when you get similar feedback from people in different parts of the world that don't know each other, right? And so I started getting this sort of groundswell of people who had already read it and said, are you going to do a companion guide to this? Like something I can kind of throw in my bag as I'm going, or just something that I have next to my, on my bedside table. And so it was interesting because I didn't think of that when I started, and I'm glad I didn't. But it says to me that it's like anything, if you connect with me as a writer, you're more apt to then want to learn from me if there is a subsequent, like, companion guide that is really focused on you, as if I'm there with you. So I'm walking you through questions and ways that I think about things relative to the chapters in the book, the original book, right? And so I think that stuff can come, right? And that doesn't mean we can't teach what we've learned, right? We've all learned these amazing skills and whatever we've done through our career. I just think that's when you step back and you say, wait a minute, we know this in school. When you're a student in school at any level, the teachers that you loved, I would garner to say, are the ones that connected with you as humans. You're not going to say they, right? They're not, I learned algebra, this was so proficient, whatever. No, it's because you connected with them as humans. And the ones that you didn't, if you actually thought about it, it's probably because they made you feel like they were born the age that they were when you met them, like they were just born a professor. It's like they're talking to, and it's hard to connect to those folks. And then what happens? You often are not connected to the material.
Oh, yeah. No, you're making me think back to, like, even high school, and I'm like, oh, who were my favorite teachers?
It's because why? Because they saw you.
Yes. Right? Yes. It's which the, is very it's impressive.
The two
for
eyes
teachers.
Emoji kind of a thing. Like, I see you. You know, as a kid said, like, I see you.
It's super impressive, by the way, because teachers see so many students year over year over year over year over year, and they remember these kids.
Yep.
The ones that do connect anyway, right? Like, they know each child really well, and it's very impressive how they have the ability to connect like that. And what that does to a child in a learning setting when they feel seen is
how do you quantify that?
It's the behavior changes completely for the child in that classroom. No, this is wonderful. So, but you didn't answer the question. Are you going to do a companion guide? The book isn't even out, by the way. When is the book coming out?
So the book hits bookstores November 12th. You can pre-order now. So obviously, as any author will know, and I'm learning like on the fly with all of this, I actually just got off with my publisher you have more and more calls with your publisher as you get closer to your date. Pre-orders are obviously very important. So, that's very, very key, but they can go to Amazon and wherever books are sold. You can go to my website, drrodberger.com, and I've got all the links there. But it does hit bookstores November 12th.
It's perfect for the end of year. And now what is your publisher? I have to ask this. I mean, otherwise,
of course,
is your publisher thinking about the audiobook edition? Are you?
So it's so funny that you brought that up. So this is another thing, you know, you learn as you go. I didn't know some of these things, right? I just ignorantly assumed every book has an audiobook.
They should.
Not the case. That's not the case. Especially with the big publishers. So what I didn't know was there's an entire sort of secondarily like license component to this. And so thankfully mine, that had been negotiated, whatever. And so it had been licensed for an audiobook.
Great.
So that's super exciting. But then I didn't know that, and this is what was interesting, just because of the work that I do and the audio that I mean, you're the pro, so you can tell me if you think my voice matches for this, but I had to actually submit samples because they said, it's up to you. We can't guarantee that they're going to accept you as the voice of your own book, but we think you might want to consider it just because of your public speaking and all these other things, right? So, but I had to send in samples of the book that I read, you know, just here in my own studio. And thankfully that got accepted. So yes,
you will be the voice of your own book.
I will be the voice. So I don't know if that's a big thing. I just had no idea about the process.
Do you know what's so funny? My Instagram post today was basically saying that authors should not narrate their own book unless you are falling into my list of exceptions. So you're checking all the boxes. So a couple of things I always say, if it's nonfiction, it should be considered. If you have a great voice, which you do, and you have public speaking skills. And the third is the stamina it takes, because there's a lot of assumptions about how
it takes
easy.
Hours.
So how many, do you know your word count off the top of your head for the book?
I don't off the top of my, it's like 60 something, whatever 60. It is. But I do know that they've already, like I'm already scheduled for my recording, and it's like, I think.
A week? Is it a week?
No, it's like 3 or 4 days.
3 or 4 days.
Thankfully, I'm in here in Nashville, so that it's easy to find a studio. So they just sort of told me, here's where you go, here's what you do. And then here's sort of there's a date for like corrections or whatever that you might have to like pickups and stuff like
yes.
that.
Yes. Right? Yes. So so you fall into my very important category of when it's right for an author to narrate their own book, because it is a lot of work. 60,000 words. So the formula, let me get my calculator. The formula in audiobook land is you take the word count and you divide it by 9,300. So you're looking at a 6.5 hour book, which is a great length. I personally also prefer listening to a lot of business books or self-development books on audio, because then I could be driving or doing something and also improving myself. But there's also opportunities in the audiobook edition sometimes when it's applicable to add things that couldn't quite make it into print, or if there's there's archival or audio tapes or something. You know, we tend to add things to the audiobook edition. Or if the print edition has a workbook or a PDF, then we can attach that to when you download the audiobook, you automatically get the PDF. So there's all that stuff. But yeah, so typically a publisher will try to grab all your rights. So print, ebook, audiobook, et cetera. And if they don't have their own audiobook division, then it's a derivative. And so they sell those sub rights to another company, and then they will produce the audiobook.
And then I've heard also, Nicole, on the translations, because I've had requests about Spanish and all these other things. And so then it's, I had no idea that then you license it to other publishers in other parts of the world. And so it just keeps going, right?
This is, it keeps just going. You have one piece. So this is what I do strategically. Like, this is when my operate, this is where I shine, which is like, I'm like, okay, you're an author, you have one piece of content, and that piece of content holds such an array of rights and opportunities, right? Because there's film, there's TV, there's translations, there's adaptations, there's the dramatized rights. There's just so much you can do with one book.
Yeah.
Right. And then you think of authors who write multiple books and you're like, oh, wow, like all these rights are floating around and all these agents are negotiating.
But that's what's exciting. I would say that there's an empowering element to it, because I think a lot of people, I'm curious now that I've been through this process, so I feel like I can say it, is that I'm curious about why people will write a book. And if they don't intend on writing more than one, then why? Is it just sort of, I just wanted to run a marathon once? Because to me, what happened for me was, I didn't actually think about it. I always knew that at some point I would write a book. I always said that to myself. It's like, this is ridiculous. I've written so many. If I look at each year, how many words have I written? And it's just like, I should have, it's like three books.
That could books, be a book. Right? That could already been a book.
You know what I mean? To me, then it sort of opened it up. It's like, okay, well, what's next? What do I want to do next? When people say, well, what's the objective of the book? Well, I hope, not that you've asked that, but it's just in general, it's, well, I hope it opens up more creative doors, that I can go on more adventures to capture more stories and platform people that would normally never be platformed. A refugee, you know, a single mom, and, you know, whatever it is, I can get creative and say, these are the stories I want to pursue. And so, yeah, I want to write more and more and more.
I mean, gosh, you've met so many interesting people, and I can't imagine that you won't continue to. So I have
I'd be very sad, Nicole, if I didn't.
I mean, again, people, go to his website. It's a very impressive background, and you clearly enjoy talking to people. You clearly find people interesting. And it takes a certain level of connection and deep listening to connect with people that way, because a lot of people just kind of are listening for, what does this mean for me? Versus like, oh, what is this person telling? You know, what's the connection? So I'm glad your publisher and your agent are working hard, because the book should be in multiple languages. It should be in multiple formats. You know, some people can't. Some people can't read, or dyslexic, or what have you. And so having an audiobook edition is something I constantly advocate for as a huge listener myself. There was something that I think I read on your website about, in connection to your book, about stories rooted in, or narratives or stories rooted in, envy or grievances. And I did want to talk about that, because I want to learn more about what you mean by that.
Yeah, I appreciate that you bringing that up. There's so many instances that where it comes up in the book. And yes, there are specific chapters where I talk about it. But I think a good example is where it's sort of, what is the objective of a story? And what role am I playing in this story? And what role are you playing, Nicole? And sort of like, if we were in some story together. You know, back in my mental health days, in working with, in this instance, families, and I do talk about this one family where, but to me it was emblematic of so many times where we are either driven or motivated by envy or the story that we have, this slippery slope. And actually, let me put a pin in that, because I just remembered one element of a story that I think really highlights this component. And I think a lot of people, especially in the U.S., can connect with. But there was this really, he's a really nice man. And I would always see him at the bus stop. And he, at one point, decided to basically go out on his own and start his own company. And I remember this feeling where there was a sort of, you could see it, there was like a time clock. There was some deadline, artificial deadline, or threshold that he felt like he had to meet every day. After he told everybody at the bus stop, this is what he was doing. And it was as if he had to inflate his story artificially each time, or on some level of, you know, on a schedule. Why? Because it felt as if he had to measure up to something that was ambiguous, that was artificial. And I noticed that. And then I started seeing it in other areas of life where we do that. It's like, this is why people January 1 say, I'm going to put this on Facebook. I'm going to lose weight now. Because you want accountability. Someone that is a group of people, a consortium of people that collectively make you feel like they're watching, right? And yep. So that's why we do those sorts of things. And I want to go back to the story of this family. and this sort of grievance element. I remember there was a mom, a dad, and a teenager that came in. And this was not just sort of the only or the sole experience of this, but the parents basically unloaded to me about, in essence, how bad this child, their child, was. And what's fascinating about that to me is that you get to a point where you have the grievances can't even spill over to the ones that you care about most. And I remember that they had sort of unloaded everything. They shared the story of what this child was doing that they didn't think was great. And it was a whole series of things. And I said, okay. You know, and then I walked, I said, I'm going to spend a little time with, you know, Johnny, whoever, you know, wasn't the young person's name. I'm going to spend a few minutes with Johnny. And they didn't really like that because they were controlling the story at that point in time. They went outside. I sat down with this individual and, you know, he had done sort of teenage stuff, right? He cursed at a teacher and just things on the edges, right? Where you just say, okay, can we clean some of that up? Sure. Right. Well, I connected with this kid and I just said, look, you parents are really angry. And, you know, should you be telling your teacher to F off or whatever in the world you were doing? It's probably not going to suit you well as you get older. Right. And you normalize some of that. Say like, I know we're just getting to know each other, but I like you. Like there, if you're doing that, that tells me the pilot light is on inside you. It doesn't mean it's being directed. That heat's not emanating out in sort of productive ways.
Right.
That stuff's easy to fix. Like, right. So the kid kind of says, okay.
I felt seen.
His role in the story is changing before his eyes. Bring the parents back in. And I basically say to them, you know, I got to tell you, I really like Johnny. Wait a minute. That's not the narrative that they came in with. That's not how they saw this playing out. In essence, they were looking for me to basically support what they were saying, which would give them credibility in this notion that this child was, and maybe maybe that prevented them from focusing on maybe marital issues or other circumstances or variables that were impacting them in a negative way. And so as I was saying this, Johnny is basically sitting up, a little bit broader shoulders, air in the lungs, right? Because it was like, wow, I'm feeling a little bit, this story is taking a different path than I had thought. And then I closed with the parents just saying, look, I agree with you. Some of these things are just, you know, who's going to want to, you know, it's not going to help him to be cursing at teachers and doing these sorts of things. But I said, I believe in him. So I know we'll work on that. That's easy. I said, but my big question is, how are the two of you going to alter your behavior when you no longer can address something that's not there anymore? And that young man sat up so straight as if he was ready to go on the football field. I don't know wherever, go to the weight room. It was like he just felt empowered. And for me, that's just, it's a great example to me of this notion of the grievances and the way in which we direct those grievances, because it impacts the stories, right? It can be something like we don't feel fulfilled at work, or we're struggling with a merger and we have new colleagues, or what really sort of stimulated us in work, you know, in the beginning of our career just is not anymore. Okay, so what's the impact? What role am I playing in that? And am I avoiding the story that I should be telling just to service my deferment of the reality of what's going on? That to me is a core element, because it's like you want to rewind the tape. It's like Blockbuster days, put in the VHS, let's rewind. Why? What is this all we go, you know, even if we corrected those elements, right? Even if Johnny fixes these things, what happens if you can't have your grievance? Well, let's talk about an alternative universe. It's like a bizarro world, like Superman. They would talk about, or Seinfeld would talk about bizarro worlds. Okay, in a narrative where the child isn't screwing up, what changes in the role? Like, what dialogue can you actually have? I mean, if you sort of put it just truly in writing terms, okay, well, what's that script look like? How boring is this dialogue? If you can no longer be on the hunt, because really the role you're playing is a detective, right? Yes. You're sniffing out sort of the BS, maybe that's presented, you know, from a teenager, which is going to be common and happen to varying degrees. Okay, but if you can't, it goes back to the Vanderbilt students I worked with, right? That positional power. If you can't claim that as a main characteristic of the role you are playing, okay, well, how does your dialogue change?
Right.
Are you now the oak tree on stage that doesn't move? Fine. Maybe in this story, that's the best place for you.
No, that's great. That's great. I mean, all of this entire conversation, right? It's about storytelling, but what that means across so many aspects. People hear storytelling and they think, oh, someone who's writing a book or a book that's been written. And what we're talking about is a wider human experience.
Yeah. And I will tell you, one of the biggest challenges I had initially in the book was I wanted to do it differently. I was very nervous about being paired up with my editor and thinking, I don't know if this is foolish or naive, but I thought, oh my goodness, if my editor, if she sort of isn't like me, will she understand my format and flow? Because it's not, I wouldn't say this is a typical format for a book at all.
Oh, no, I'm really excited.
I open the book where it's like a movie script. I take you into Nazi Germany. And my late father, who grew up in Nazi Germany as a youth, you experience that. And then whether or not the stories that I had been told have been challenged by an expert in fascism in Europe. Like, so I take you through, I wanted to show you different forms of story. My sister-in-law passed away at the age of 30.
Oh gosh.
With three kids.
Young.
And I was asked to give the eulogy, graveside, because I was the quote storyteller and the writer, right? You get to read that eulogy in its entirety.
It's in the Why? Book.
Because I want people to see that story can play so many different roles. It's not something that is an add-on. It's not an add-on, right? It's a way to connect with people. And so if I can show you different ways that story has played a role in my life, great. It's like I included a letter that I was very fortunate to be included into a book called Voices of the Future out of Dubai as a storyteller that people should, I guess, watch, which made me feel old and humbled and appreciative all in the same notion. And this one individual who's very creative is an AI expert and researcher. And he and I become friends. And he wrote a letter. He had ChatGPT write a letter to humans.
Oh.
And it was so compelling. I said, can I put this in the book? So again, I wanted people to have experiences where I'm not just talking about, like, in essence, the elements of story.
No, this is fantastic. I have it marked on my calendar. And I'm like, November 12th, I got to pre-order my copy. I am, and then I'm going to be hounding you for the guide. But also, I would love to follow up with you after your narration experience, because one question that I often ask authors, but also when I work with authors who are currently writing an audio project for us, is, are you writing for audio, right? Because it's sometimes, when you write a book, you're not thinking of the audiobook edition. It's just not top of mind. And there are little things. So I'm curious, when you're narrating, and then when you're in the booth, you may or may not catch it in the script and say, you know what, I'm going to change that line. Like, give me a pen. I'm going to change that line. And I'm going to just narrate this part a little differently, because it is a slightly different, it hits a little different when it's for the ear. And so I would love to follow up with you to see how that experience.
Yeah. Now look, what I've been told is that version of my manuscript is going to be edited for just the booth. Right. So to your point, cause you're right. If you read it out loud, you're going, this doesn't make any sense. If I'm like talking to you, if I'm sharing a conversation, and that's what hopefully the book comes across as.
Yeah. I'm excited. I'm excited for you to have this experience of narrating the audiobook for 3-4 days. And I always love to close my conversations with the question of, what would you like to be true 12 months from now?
What would I like to be true 12 months from now? Wow. Okay, you stumped me on that one. That's a very, what would I like to be true in 12 months? You know, this sounds really corny, but maybe it's just that my belief in humanity and the power of story still has the value that I think that it does.
Well, we're going to find out too, because your book will be out by then. 12 months from now too. So this has been so lovely. I'm going to link everything in the show notes, but if you're listening, your website is drrodberger.com, and the book will be available anywhere you get your books and your audiobooks. And we're going to be following you closely. I can't wait to get my copy. Will you have signed copies? I might.
Well, thank you. It's very kind. I have not approached that just yet.
Okay.
I'm trying to figure some of that stuff out.
All right.
But I can maybe make that work. I have had more people ask me about that, so I need to figure that out.
Figure it out, because I have my nice collection. Most of my guests, I have all on my bookshelf here, all signed copies, which I treasure.
Well, I gotta join that list.
I gotta join my book. Thank you so much, and we will be hopefully catching up soon.
Thank you, Nicole.
Thank you so much for joining me this week. For more information on today's episode, please check out the show notes or go to writeronblockpodcast.com. Before we wrap up, if today's episode sparked ideas for your author career, don't let them sit in your head. Take action. If you are ready for high impact support, I offer one-on-one strategy sessions to help authors like you navigate your author business with precision. Head to reignitewithnicole.com to book a session or apply for any of my author programs. And if you found this episode valuable, please share it with a fellow writer and leave a review. Thanks for listening to Writer Unblocked, and I will see you next time.